Welcome to Naylor's Nattering, musings on evidence-based teaching and professional learning. Follow us on Twitter at PNA1977.
Hello and welcome to episode one proper of Naylor's Natter, a podcast in which we talk to teachers about their use of educational research and evidence in the classroom. And this week, to kick us off, we interview Simon Cox, the Blackpool Research School Director. In a wide-ranging interview, I ask him about his favourite piece of research, why he read it, and how it's impacted on him and his students. And I'll also be talking to him about the hugely successful Research Ed Conference that Blackpool are hosting for the second year in March, and this year they'll be attracting over 500 teachers. It's a fantastic interview, despite the sound quality. You were pleased to know, listeners, I have invested in a higher quality microphone, but unfortunately I forgot to bring it, so it was recorded on good old-fashioned iPhone. But the quality of the interview hopefully will shine through despite the audio. So without further ado, I'll hand you over to Simon Cox. So in this first episode of Naylor's Natter, we welcome Mr. Simon Cox, the Research School Director for Blackpool Research School. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you very much.
As we're speaking to you live from the end of our very successful metacognition course on a sunny Thursday afternoon in Blackpool. So I'll just ask Simon a few questions about his use of research in his day-to-day practice. So, Simon, tell our listeners a little bit more about you, your journey to this point and your current role.
Well, I've been teaching for around about 15 years now, maths teacher, so I've always taught in Blackpool. I started at a school just down the road from the school I work at now, so I was a maths teacher for a few years, took on the responsibility of second in department and ultimately head of department, at which point I moved schools to a promoted post as an assistant head teacher, which is in the school that I currently work in at the moment. And then whilst I was in post in my current job, the school became a research school. So that was a great opportunity for myself. Applied for the job as director of research school and was appointed to the position. And I've currently been doing this job for around about 18 months. Still teaching though, still very much a maths teacher with, you know, year 10, year 11, year 12 classes. So haven't sort of given up the day job as it were, but really, really enjoying my current role as director of the research school.
Sounds fantastic. Well, the big focus of the podcast is to discuss with our listeners the one piece of research that has most influenced you. And I guess in your role as Research School Director, it's difficult to distill it down to one piece. But if I had to force your hand, what is that one piece of research?
Yeah, well, to be honest, it didn't take much thinking this. You're right, I have read an awful lot of papers over the last sort of couple of years, a lot of which has resonated with me and has helped me to sort of develop my practice. But the one sort of standout paper is Barack Rosenshine's Principles of Instruction. I think it
wasn't too difficult for me to choose that one. I'm actually glad that I'm on this podcast first, because I suspect that if I wasn't, somebody would have taken this before me and I would have had to think of something else. But for me, that is the one piece of research that all teachers should read.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm aware that Rosenshine is extremely popular, and one of our follow-up guests may well be talking a little bit about that in a future episode. So if you cast your mind back to when and where did you actually read that research paper?
Well, I think it was certainly before I took on the role as Director of Research School. I reckon it's probably about 3 years ago that I read Principles of Instruction for the first time, which is a shame because it's been out for a number of years now, and actually... the version that a lot of people read is the one that was published in the American Educator Journal, I think in 2012, so about 7 years ago now. But Rosenshine's ideas had been around for a number of years before that. And actually, if you read, Tom Sherrington has done a great blog on sort of the origins of Barack Rosenshine's ideas and where the principles were formed from. And this has been going on for a number of years now. So I do regret not reading it sooner, because it's one of those papers that in its simplicity and its accessibility and its
relevance to everyday classroom practice, I don't think that you can get a better read. So in terms of when, I would say probably about three years ago, but I wish it had been a lot sooner.
And kind of casting your mind back to that, can you remember why exactly it was that you came to read that? Is it linked to your research school role, or was it just more as a classroom teacher or someone in charge of maths?
Yeah, it wasn't specifically to do with my role, because it was before I took on the role. But I was becoming more aware of evidence and research. I think there's been a big push over the past few years. Certainly, there's been an awful lot of educational books that have come out, a lot of podcasts, a lot of journals that are becoming more accessible, you know, sort of moving away from the very, what can be very dry academic journals towards things that are a lot more readable for teachers and a lot more accessible and relevant to the day job. I think the reason why I read it is just because I was becoming more evidence informed, and it will have been some Twitter post or blog post or something like that. I can't remember specifics, but it will have been recommending, you know, one of these sort of five research papers all teachers must read, and it will have come up in that. And I think what it did the first time I read it certainly was make me realise that research evidence doesn't have to be sort of really highbrow. I'm not suggesting that the principles behind it aren't, because they are, and there's a lot of very credible and very academic research that's gone into the paper, but the actual paper itself is really readable, and it pointed the direction to a lot of other sort of papers and things like that. I think it was one of the first papers that I read that was published in American Educator, at which point I found out that actually American Educator had published a load of other great articles, like, you know, the work of John Dunlosky on strengthening the student toolbox and that kind of thing. And there was one from Kirshner and a few others about basically the principles behind effective instruction techniques. So it sort of opened the floodgates, if you like, and it was definitely part of the start of my journey to becoming more evidence informed. And I think a lot of other people have done it in the same way. Actually, I think Rosenshine's work is almost like a gateway to lots and lots of other evidence and research papers that are out there.
Thank you. I think our listeners will be really interested in terms of how it could be used in a classroom. And I was interested to hear that you are still very much in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So in terms of your own practice, how have you used the research in your own classroom? And I guess what has been the impact of that?
Yeah, well, for those people that haven't read the paper, and I hope that, you know, if you are listening to this and you haven't, that you will, what Rosenshine does is he reviews the evidence around effective instruction, and he provides 10 principles for effective instruction. Actually, when you dig a bit deeper, he actually recommended 17, but everyone loves the top 10, don't they? So I he distilled that down to sort of the 10 most effective principles in instruction, and they are, I hesitate to say they are obvious, because they're not obvious, because it wasn't obvious to me before I read it. But when you read it, you're thinking, you know, you're nodding along thinking, actually, do you know what, this makes sense, this, and it's also, it doesn't require masses of time as a teacher to implement the things that he says. It's stuff that's relatively easy, relatively quick, but does have an impact. So for example, the first of the principles is beginning the lesson with a review of previous learning. A lot of time we do that anyway, you know, it's about linking to what's gone before, but just making explicit the fact that that is a really important principle. Presenting new material in small steps, it links closely to Sweller's work on cognitive load theory, about this idea that by breaking things down into smaller chunks rather than presenting something as a whole, we can help students engage with that, and we can try to ensure that more students engage with difficult content by breaking it down into those smaller steps. Importantly as well, he talks about the importance of practice after each of those steps, so not moving on too quickly. Asking lots of questions. You know, again, you ask a teacher, if they ask a lot of questions, they'll say, yes, of course we do. But it's about checking the responses, what you do about that. Modelling, guiding student practice, checking for understanding. One, I think, that I found particularly interesting was one of his principles is about obtaining a high success rate. So making sure that, you know, if you've decided that thing is worth teaching, then you have decided it's worth those students learning that. So if only 30% of your class have got it, have understood it, have demonstrated the understanding of that, you need to rethink that, you need to revisit, because that's not high enough. And I think that was a particularly interesting one for me. He talks about scaffolding difficult tasks. He talks about independent practice. And again, he talks about weekly and monthly review. So this idea really of spaced practice. And again, my reading since then has opened up a whole world of evidence and research around spaced practice. But this was my first encounter of that. And again, now when I think back, it's like, well of course, you know, of course they're going to demonstrate understanding there and then the first time you teach it them. But 6 weeks later, do they still understand it? Well, possibly not. It's my job to make sure that we do that review and that revisit and that reteach if necessary. So I think, as I said, that there's nothing in there that sounds particularly like it's going to change the world. And a lot of it is just what we consider to be good teaching. I think part of the reason why I think it's really good is it's relevant to all subjects, it's relevant to all contexts. So he doesn't talk about, you know, this being a strategy for English teachers or maths teachers. It's for all teachers. Now, it will look different in different subjects, as it should. But the principles there are about universal good teaching, you know, questioning, practicing knowledge, all those other things. And it's really easily applied to lots of different classrooms. So I think in terms of the impact on my practice, it's made me far more aware of what works. And it's made me aware of those simple little things that I need to keep doing and I need to implement time and time again within my classroom. So rather than focusing on the you know, the activities in the lesson and what I'm going to do and what the kids are going to do, obviously you need to think about those things, but it's really made me think about the learning and those things that I need to make sure just become part and parcel of my everyday practice that lead to good outcomes for students. And I think what one of the things I've noticed in my classroom as a result of reading this paper and implementing it is kids actually seem to quite enjoy learning like this. So you know, they get it. You know, motivation comes through success. So when I'm breaking things down into smaller steps and providing the practice and they can see that they can do it, that's really encouraging for them rather than what I used to do, which is maybe present too big a thing too quickly that they weren't quite ready for, which can lead to giving up. You know, I don't get it, I can't do it, so I'm going to, you know, the shutters are going to come down and I'm not going to engage with this. So for me, an absolute game changer of a paper, and I do think that it's something that everybody, it doesn't matter what subject you teach, doesn't matter what phase you teach, that there's something in there that's going to impact on your teaching.
Brilliant. So part of this podcast is really about sharing best practice, evidence and research-based practice across the teaching community. So how have you gone about sharing this with fellow teachers? Obviously, you've got quite a pivotal role in terms of your director of research school, but have you shared this with teachers in your own school? Have you shared this wider?
Yeah, I mean, initially, you know, in terms of sharing it, you know, things like I've shared these things out on Twitter and things like that. I'm an active tweeter, and I think that's where I found it. I'm almost certain that's where I found it. So the fact that I can share things like that is great, and there's so much good stuff out there as well on Twitter, as well as some stuff which is, shall we say, less than good. I think in terms of my job and my role, obviously being director of research school gives me great opportunity to work with lots of teachers, not just in my school but across Blackpool. Indeed, I mean, the course that we've just finished today on metacognition, we had people from 20 odd different schools scattered all over Blackpool and Lancashire. So great opportunity, and so I get the chance to share these things. We wrote training course around the EEF Maths Guidance Report that I've delivered across Blackpool. I've spoken about it all over the country, and we're about to, we're continuing with some work up in Cumbria where we're working with lots of schools. We actually incorporated principles of instruction into that course because we felt it was so useful and linked quite closely to some of the recommendations in the Maths Guidance Report. So I've shared it like that. In terms of our school, we at the research school lead our school CPD, the teaching and learning strand of it anyway, this academic year. And one of the main things we've done is we've provided a booklet of research papers to all staff that we were going to read together throughout the year. So I've mentioned Dunlosky's work on the student toolbox, that was in there, but Barak Rosenstein's principal instructions was also in there. And we have read that together as a staff, you know, so we're talking every single member of our teaching staff has now read principles of instruction, but we also had an entire inset day around what does this mean for our subjects. We provided the generic sort of introduction, but then departments and teachers and heads of department got the opportunity to think about, okay, what does this look like in English, in history, in maths, in science, or whatever your subject happens to be. So I think my recommendation to anyone that was going to do something similar would be to think really carefully about how you're going to do that. So, you know, by all means, share the paper with teachers via email or whatever, but if you think it's worth reading, and if there's a school or a school leader you think, actually, we're going to do some work around this, plan carefully for the implementation of that. How are you going to do that? How many sessions are you going to commit to that? How are you going to make sure you provide the time for teachers to read that? Because, yeah, again, if I was in any school, it wouldn't have to be a research school, but I would recommend that all teachers did something around the reading of this paper. There's some nice little summaries out there, actually. So Oliver Coviglioli did one side of A4 where he's really nicely summarised the 10 principles. But I do stress it's really important to go back to the original paper, because you do lose some of the nuance around the principles if you just look at the A4 summary. So my recommendation would be read the paper first and use the A4 summary as like a prompt sheet afterwards to remind yourself of things. But do engage with the original paper. It's really readable, relatively short. I think it's about 9 pages long, so it doesn't take long to read. And make sure that you're engaging with that properly. But yeah, I've been lucky. I've had the opportunity to share this paper with lots of different people, and will continue to do so.
Fantastic. So just to move on to Research Ed and Blackpool. This year's Research Ed Blackpool is touching on 500, or maybe it's gone beyond 500 years, I don't know.
Well, we can't quite believe it. I mean, last year we had around about 240, 250. I'll be honest, we were absolutely blown away with that. We thought that was brilliant. I mean, geographically, Blackpool is not best positioned to get a big crowd. We're out on a limb, we're on the coast, you know, a few hours from London, Manchester, Birmingham, these places. So we were blown away with that, and the speakers that we managed to get to come last year, you know, phenomenal. We couldn't quite believe that we'd got the audience and the lineup that we had. However, this year has just got, you know, if we were blown away with last year, then this has gone stratospheric. We're at 500 at the moment. We've not got many tickets left now. We are going to cap it because, you know, I've stretched the limit of what's possible with 500, if we're honest. And the lineup again is sensational. So what we've done this year, we've got more speakers than we had last year, and we've organised them into strands. So we've got, you know, the usual research and evidence speakers you'd expect to see at a research ed, but then we've invited several people to talk about maths, to talk about literacy, and to talk about science. So, you know, if you're a science teacher, it will be possible to come and just listen to science talks all day, and the same goes for maths, and the same goes for English, or obviously you can shake it up a bit and have a bit of variety if that's what you want. And also we've been quite conscious of the fact that we have not just had a secondary focus, so we've got primary colleagues coming to deliver sessions, we've got SEND specialists, you know, all sorts of different things going on. So yeah, absolutely blown away with the response. And like I say, if you are listening to this and you haven't got a ticket yet, do rush, because it won't last long.
Absolutely. And part of this podcast's kind of reason for being is to shine a light on research for teachers. But also, I noticed this year that you've also got some more local teachers who are maybe presenting for the first time.
Yeah, we have. We were really keen to have a Blackpool flavour. You know, it's Research Ed Blackpool. We don't want it to be the same as every other Research Ed. So we were keen to have, you know, some new voices, some new faces who maybe haven't been on the Research Ed circuit before. So we've got Jess Wormsley, Ben Gordon. We've got our own Lauren Stevenson, who works here. We've also got Cheryl Drabble, who joined us from one of the local special schools. She joined us last year and is joining us again. And of course, Stephen Tierney, who's our executive director here, again joined us last year, and we'll be doing so here again. I might have my arm twisted and I might get up and do a session myself, but I've not decided as yet. But yeah, it's a really good lineup of sort of local teachers, really, and it's great to sort of shine a light on some of the fantastic work that's happening across Blackpool, because as I say, I've worked here 15 years. There's always been great practice across the town, and that's just getting better and better all the time. And I think I'm not going to put this down to the research school alone, but you know, I think we've helped. I certainly think that evidence and research are becoming more widely talked about across the town. I love it when I talk at things. One of the questions I always ask with my research school hat on is how many people in the audience have heard of, used the EEF toolkit, for example, and various other things. And I'll be honest, when I go around the country talking at things, it can be less than 50% of people. When I talk in Blackpool, every hand goes up. And it was great to be in a session just last week, actually, with Blackpool teachers, where the speaker asked how many people in the audience are aware of and have heard of cognitive load theory. And, you know, literally a sea of hands went up. I mean, that to me is fantastic. And that is developing all the time. So, yeah, a real local flavour to research at Blackpool this year. And yeah, please do come along and hear some of our fantastic teachers share their expertise.
Right, that's brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time, especially after a very busy day today. If people and listeners would like to know a little bit more about you, firstly, Blackpool Research School, and maybe a little bit more about Research Ed, where would you direct them to?
Okay, well me personally, follow me on Twitter. I'm at MathMrCox. So yeah, that's the best place to get in touch with me. In terms of the Research School, we are Research School SMCA. It's Research SCH SMCA on Twitter. We also have a Research School website and blog, but you can find more about that if you go on the Twitter account. There's a link to that in the bio. Yeah, and please do engage. Like I say, we are a relatively new network in the Research Schools. We've been going a year and a half, but the whole network has only been going 2.5 years. Really, really exciting. There's 22 schools nationally, so if you're not in the Blackpool area, you won't be that far from a research school. So please, if it's not us you engage with, do engage with your nearest research school, because there's a lot of great work going on that I would highly recommend people getting involved with.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Mr. Cox.
And thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll agree that was a fantastic interview with Simon Cox, who speaks with such enthusiasm about the impact that research and evidence have had on him and his teaching. Coming up in future weeks, we hope to speak to the Teacher Development Trust's expert advisor and Research Ed Blackpool presenter, John Collier. And in the usual shameless plug to finish, if you've enjoyed what you've heard and you're interested in more, then you can follow me on Twitter at PNA1977. And you can find this podcast on Spotify. So thanks again for listening, and see you next time.